If you were to ask 100 different people what the word church means, you'd probably get 100 different answers. And if you were to ask 100 Presbyterians what the word church means, you'd probably get 150 different answers. So, true? Yeah, and obviously church means different things to different people, and it can mean different things to us at different seasons of our life. But one way of answering the question is to pose the question, why am I here? You know, why do I go to church? My first memories of church was when I was really young. Like preschoolish age, and my mom would take us, my brother and I, down to the local church and drop us off for Sunday school and then come back and pick us up and take us home. So, you know, the beginning of my life, I guess I went because I was taken. But later, we moved, and I think I was probably about the third grade, and for whatever reasons, my mom quit taking my brother and I to Sunday school, but there was a Methodist church right down at the end of the street, and I'd walk myself down there on Sunday morning and go to church. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I didn't get a whole lot out of the sermon, but it was good being there. And what really fascinated me was communion. And it was, you know, they had a rail in those days, and in the Methodist tradition, I'm not really totally sure what the rail symbolized. But at any rate, during communion, people would go forward and kneel at the rail, and the minister would serve them communion. And I was just fascinated by it. So one day I decided I was going to, you know, check it out. So I up to the rail, and the minister came by and gave me communion, and that was really cool. And I went back, sat down, and this person said, "Communion's only for members." Yes. I wasn't very good at following rules in those days, so I kept going up to the rail. And the dude kept serving me, so he wasn't real good at following rules either. My kind of guy. Well, you know, I get to adolescence, and I've had enough of the Methodists and all their rules, so I'm going to be a Presbyterian, and, you know, I don't know what I was thinking, but... Yeah, I definitely didn't do my research on that one. But at any rate, I start going to First Scots Presbyterian Church. Now, you have to remember, this is the 1950s. I'm in the Bible Belt. And in the Bible Belt during the 1950s, where you attended church, you know, had a certain social significance to it, you know. And First Scots was the place where all of the social achievers attended. It was in the wealthy part of Charleston. The Blue Bloods went there, and you know, there's a lot of status associated with going to First Scots. And so, yeah, to make a long story short, I'm in confirmation class, and and one day after class, I'm walking down the hall, and this, I'm sure, very well-intending person came up to me and said, "People who live on Society Street do not attend First Scots." And I'm sure that Second Presbyterian Church would be glad to have you. Well, there was a problem. You see, First Scots is here, and my house is here, and Second Presbyterian is here. So in order to get from First Scots to Second Presbyterian, I had to pass through my house, and my house was where I stayed. if you hear what I'm saying, you know. For, you know, that was pretty much the end of church for me for a while. And kind of my next memory is I'm on a troop ship. We're sitting off, I'm the 4th Infantry Division, and we're sitting off the coast of Vietnam. And the next day, we're to go inland. And word came out that the ministers and the rabbis and the priests, they were praying for people before we would go on shore. And if we wanted to receive prayers, we could, you know, attend a service. So I got in this really, really long line. And I'm sure it was filled with a lot of people just like me, you know. And so anyway, we go through and we're getting our prayers. And I remember that the minister prayed for us what would happen to us if we died. And to be honest with you, that didn't give me a lot of comfort. But but I appreciate the thought. But months later, you know, I'm at a Ford fire base. We're about, I guess, I can't remember, a mile, 2 miles away from the Cambodian border. And there was a field hospital at the fire base. And the previous day had been a really bad day. We had lost an entire platoon in an ambush. And this day, there's the hospital, and there's a lot of body bags, you know, 40, 50 body bags. And those, I did some soul work, I guess, and, you know, standing, I remembered the prayers of the minister as I did my soul work with these body bags. And, yeah, I think at that moment, you know, prayer really became important to me in my faith journey. You know, I wasn't a person of prayer. It just, you know, kind of, it all came home a little bit. But at any rate, so we fast forward along, and I'm now living in Europe, attending University of Munich. And God really became, you know, God started doing a work in my life, as we say. And, you know, at that point, this is the, like, late 60s, early 70s, and people my age in the 60s and 70s were pretty anti-institutional, and we were non-discriminatory in that. If it was an institution, we were against it, you know? I mean, that's where we were. And, you know, and my thinking at that time was that, you know, the church is an institution, and God didn't need the church to do a work in people's lives, and I didn't need the church for God to do a work in my life. You know, that's just where I was. It was pretty myopic thinking and fairly narrow, but that's where I was. But I could really feel the Spirit moving in my life at that time. And you know, fast forward again, I'm practicing law in South Carolina, and I just, there's the Spirit again began to really move in my life, and God's doing a work in my life, and it's good. And I'm reading spiritual literature, including the Bible. I'm praying, I'm meditating, I'm doing all of this really good Spirit work, but there's still this emptiness in my life. You know, there's still the space that needed to be filled. And I was longing for that proverbial something more. And I wasn't really sure how I was going to fill that something more, but there was this hunger, and it just kept coming back to me. I needed to go back to church. And that was kind of a scary thought for me, to be honest with you. But at any rate, I do, and I end up at Sunrise Presbyterian Church on Sullivan's Island in South Carolina. And some friends of mine invited me to the pilgrimage. Now, you all are probably not familiar with the Presbyterian pilgrimage. It's more of an East Coast kind of thing. But it's a lay-led retreat, 3 days. And it was life-changing for me. Not only did I experience God in new ways, but truly for the first time in my life, I felt the love of the church. You know, I felt loved by the people of God. And that was life-changing for me. For me then, what the church really meant to me was connections. You know, the connections we make with God, and just as important, the connections we make with one another. And share with you a couple of verses from our reading today, two verses from the Gospel of John. And you know, John gives us the most detailed and what I think insightful account of the passion of Christ and the events leading up to that the night before in the upper room. It starts at chapter 14 and goes on to about chapter 18. And a part of it is, you know, Christ giving his final instructions to the disciples. And then in chapter 17, Christ prays for the disciples. You really have to read it all to appreciate the spiritual depth of it. We didn't have time to read the whole thing because it would take the whole you know, service. But let me share with you two verses. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. The one who abides in me and I in him or her, that is the one who bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. You know, for me, this is all about our connection and the importance of being connected with Christ, and Christ telling the disciples here their importance of being connected with him, but also with one another, and that comes out more in chapter 17 in his prayer. But Christ knew that as they go out into the world, without the fellowship, the love, and the comfort and support of one another, you know, put it in modern terms, they're toast. You know, there's just no way that they would be able to accomplish, one, their task, but also just to remain alive and healthy and spiritually whole and, you know, all of those things that are so important to our life that we need one another. You know, as I said earlier, God doesn't need the church to do a work in people. The church is not the institution, it's not the building, it's not the doctrine, it's the people. And God doesn't need all of this to do a work, but we do. We need it. And if someone wants, it is a real blunt question, this lady comes up to me and said, John, do you need to be here? That was a great question. You know, it was really, really good. I was a little bit taken aback by the bluntness of it. But as I thought about it, I said to myself, yeah, you know, I do need to be here. I need the love and the support of the body of Christ, of the people of God. And, you know, God doesn't. God's got all power. God doesn't need anything. But we do. We need it in order to be fully alive and to enjoy the richness of life and to get through this, you know, all the stuff that life throws at us. We need one another in order to do that. You know, as you've heard on, you know, kind of multiple times, today's Volunteer Appreciation Sunday. And another word for volunteering is creating connections. Because the work that we do to make this possible is creating connections with one another and with God. As we serve others through our service in the church, we show them that they're important to us. And we show them that they matter, that they're important people. And we show them our love, but also the love of Christ. So as we do the myriads of things we do, from handing out the bulletins to making coffee to helping in Logos or the youth group, volunteering in the office, serving on a commission, or deacons or elders, and on and on and on, in all of those things, we are creating connections with one another. And we're making it possible for all of us to get the most out of life and enjoy the fullness and the richness of everything that God has for us in this life. So to all of you, you know, I want to say you are the church. You are the church. The church is not the building. It's not the institution. It's you. You are the church. You make the church. And I want to thank each and every one of you for all that you do to make all of our lives better. Amen.